Hello and welcome to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. I am Beth Shank, long-term host of the podcast, with guest hosts today, Dr. Heidi Honegger-Rogers and Dr. Daniel Smith. They interview a fascinating person, Dr. Jacqueline Fawcett, legendary nursing educator and theorist who talks about planetary health framework, amongst other things. Enjoy!
Everyone, welcome. I am Heidi Honegger-Rogers from the University of New Mexico College of Nursing, and I am so pleased to be here with my co-host for our interview today, Dr. Daniel Smith from the University of Buffalo.
Hi, everyone, and thanks, Heidi, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here today and get to talk about a really interesting topic.
And we couldn't be more thrilled to be here today with Dr. Jacqueline Fawcett from the University of Massachusetts at Boston. Jackie, you have been moving and thinking and teaching and writing and nursologying in nursing for a career that spanned 60 years. Can you talk to us a little bit about, can you just share a little bit about your nursing story? For our community of people who are here with us today.
Well, I graduated from Boston University School of Nursing when they had a School of Nursing, which closed in the middle 1980s. And I was married at the end of that summer, and my husband had a position teaching in the art department at the University of Connecticut. So we moved to Connecticut, and I was looking for a position in nursing, and there wasn't anything at the time on days, and my husband was working days, and I didn't think working nights was a very good idea. Plus, we lived in a rural area, and I wasn't so excited about driving at night in back roads and such. So I ended up teaching in a small diploma program in Norwich, Connecticut. I taught there for I think like 3 years, and then I went to New York University for my master's degree in parent-child nursing with a minor in nursing education. And when I finished my, I guess before my master's, and then after my master's, I taught at the University of Connecticut School of Nursing. And then I went back to NYU for my PhD in 1972 and finished that in 1976 and was again teaching at the University of Connecticut. And then I was recruited to the University of Pennsylvania in 1978 by Florence Downs, who had been my dissertation chair at NYU, and then had transitioned to Penn as the associate dean and director of graduate studies, and Claire Fagan was the dean. So I went to Penn, and I commuted from Connecticut to Philadelphia, and was there usually like about 3 or 4 days a week. And then in 1999, there had been changes in administration, and I wasn't exactly excited about what was happening in terms of my particular career at Penn. So I transitioned to the University of Massachusetts Boston, and I've been there since 1999. And I've been teaching at Penn. I taught in the master's and in the PhD program, and I think 1 or 2 semesters I taught an undergraduate course. And then at UMass Boston, I taught across all three levels. And right now I'm teaching primarily in the PhD program. I'm teaching a course in contemporary disciplinary knowledge and a course in health policy.
Well, that is incredible. And you have been up and around the New England coast and at all of these universities and teaching grads and undergrads, PhD students now. And I just know as a former student of yours myself that that there is a whole world of nurses that have benefited from you being present in their education. So on behalf of all of us, thank you for all of that cool work that you have been doing and are continuing to do in nursing. I know Dan, oh yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. I have a sense that the courses I teach are not necessarily appreciated by the learners during that coursework or during the time that they're in school, but perhaps later. I mean, I tend, you know, because I don't teach clinical courses most recently. And I think most students are really, you know, like certainly master students are more interested in their clinical practice. Undergraduates are always interested in gaining clinical skills and don't connect the knowledge base with and the research methods with what they're doing. And I make those leaps for them, but they don't always mean very much. And the doctoral students are probably more interested in methods than they are sort of the primacy of methods versus theory, but they get it eventually. So I'm very appreciative of that. And I'm very honored by the number of people within our discipline and without our discipline who do cite my work.
You know, I mean, it's interesting that you, and thank you for bringing that up. I've had the opportunity to be the faculty that's teaching theory for 9 years now at the University of New Mexico. And for me, I'm not sure I had a humanities degree and, you know, before I went into nursing. So I had a little bit of a sense of how what we think about helps to shape how we move in the world and how we work with patients. But I think I really started to appreciate theory when I started working with patients who had addiction, and I wasn't exactly sure how I was going to approach the work. And I actually turned to theoretical frameworks to help me navigate into the, you know, the nooks and crannies of how to partner with people on their healing path with addiction. And I think that's really where I started to deeply appreciate the value of having thinking about how things work from a bigger picture so that we can use them to partner with our patients, to do the work that we care about in the world. And so, yeah, you're right. Theory gets a bad rap sometimes. So Daniel, I know you had a couple questions.
Yeah, no, I mean, just going off of theory, right? I was that student who hated it. I was always like, took me back to high school English when they were asking like why the curtain was blue. And I was like, it's not because they're depressed. It's just blue. And I think one of the reasons I wore my blue sweater today was that connection with theory. And finally, like, I hated it. I was like, I'm never going to use this. But then as you're farther out from your training, I think what you said, Jackie, is really true about you start to appreciate it. And I know at Villanova, I had the fortune of I got to teach a class on planetary health and had students from all over the campus. It wasn't just nurses. And it was really interesting when we would talk about concepts in planetary health, either through Paul Farmer's Pathology of Powers book or Jessica Hernandez's Fresh Banana Leaves. And you would see the biology students who would have like all this cellular theory trying to convince the sociologists that intersectionality didn't really matter and vice versa. But it was a lot of fun. But I think that kind of leads me into this question for you. I've given a lot of thought to the environmental determinants of health, being a climate change and health researcher. And just curious about your viewpoint of how we can use some of these traditional nursing theories to promote environmental health, but also what tips may you have for people like Heidi and I who are thinking about proposing the planetary health education framework as a potential middle range theory for the nursing profession?
Well, I think that it would be a very nice theory maybe starting with a situation-specific theory and then seeing if it applies in various different situations and kind of grows up, if you will, to a middle-range theory. Certainly we need that. I think that would be a really nice contribution. I think that, I mean, my view of environment is everything. I mean, you know, I mean, my PhD was with Martha Rogers, and, you know, NYU was very Rogerian at that time, and in some ways probably still is. And there's lots and lots of Rogerians out there, including Rory and many other people in the Society of Rogerian Scholars. And I think we just think about the environment as everything. And other people think of more like a more particulate view of there's an internal environment within us, and then there's the external environment. And the external environment can extend to the globe, you know, global, or probably in Rogerian thought, to the universe. And so it's just that I think it's just really important to think about the environment more than just the immediate environment. You know, originally I was thinking of the environment more like what's happening where the nurse and the so-called patient are, and then like maybe the family, and then over time I really thought more about Martha Rogers' thinking and just what was happening in the world, and thinking about it more globally. And I was developing a conceptual model for nursology for equity and quality, and focused on health policy and population health. And I presented sort of the beginning thoughts about that conceptual model in at a 5-campus forum for the University of Massachusetts. That's 5 campuses, and we have 5 separate PhD programs. And it was there's a forum every year for that. So I was presenting, and I asked for some feedback. And one of the PhD learners there said, "Well, what about climate?" And I said, "Okay, so climate would really fit under environment, so climate and climate change," and so that's where it landed for me.
Fantastic. And do you mind, just for our listeners that may not know what nursology is, can you give us just a 30-second overview?
Well, nursology is like any other ology: psychology, sociology, biology, pathophysiology, whatever. It's the knowledge of our discipline, the knowledge of nursing. So I use nursology in place of nursing, and I use nursologist in place of nurse, and all from students to graduates of 60 plus years are all nursologists. So there's no differentiation. And interestingly, I was seeing a dermatologist the other day, and I mentioned that I am very involved in nursology, and he said, "Oh, that's really interesting." So I'm getting more positive, I think I would say, or more acceptance of the term from physicians and what we generally call the lay, or the general public, than I am within our own discipline. Although certainly we have a huge number of visitors to the nursology.net website every week, and from many, many different countries. So people at least are coming to the website, and maybe it's making an impact that we call our discipline nursology. When a group of us who happen to be in the Nursing Theory Guided Expert Panel of the American Academy of Nursing, we're thinking about setting up a website for all things theoretical, if you will. We said, "Well, what are we going to call it?" And I had been sensitized to the term nursology a couple of years before that, and written an article with some students and a faculty colleague. And so I said, "Well, why don't we call it nursology?" So Peggy Chin and I essentially founded nursology.net in September of 2018, and we've been going strong. And it's, you know, it's, as I said, it's got lots and lots and lots of visitors. And we add to the website. So your theory would be something. We ask that people publish before they do a blog, or especially before they put it on the website as a particular theory, and so that there are resources for people. And we have a blog every week. We're thinking about there are times when we might be able to expand having 2 blogs a week, and it doesn't cost anything for anybody. And we were able to get the license for the 50 nurse tiers interviews that I did, and then Martha Alleygood did a series after me. And Fitney essentially went out of business, and I negotiated with their owner to get the video. So we have those, which is wonderful to have. I mean, I have them, and some other colleges have them. We bought them when Fitney was still in existence. And then, so now we have them on our website, and the only proviso is you can't download them, but you can view them as many times as you want. So we're really excited about that as an addition to our website, and just everybody's contributions.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the Nursology website, and it was Rory Zohorek who introduced me to the nursology.net, but we have been using that in our courses at UNM. And I do appreciate the blog because I get a sense of what are people thinking about in the, you know, in the field of nursing as nursologists. And you all have been talking lately about you've pointed into in some writing that you've done recently, you've been talking about the term planetary health and thinking about that. And I wanna, you know, as we're talking, I wanna think about, you know, the environment. You were talking about the environment is everything, right? And you know, it's our microbiome. It's on the cellular level, and it's on the microbial level, and it's, you know, it's runs through our communities and our systems and our, you know, larger ecological systems and the planetary systems as well. You know, climate change being one of the ecological drivers for health in the planetary health framework and in that field. Can you talk a little bit about just how you're thinking about planetary health and the how nurses, nurse, and how we move in it, move with, you know, planetary health in nursology specifically, if you've got some wisdoms to share at this point?
Well, I mean, for me, planetary health means that we're concerned not only with the health of individuals and families and communities and societies, but the entire planet. And so whatever people want at the theoretical level to include that, they would. But the idea was that a global environment to deal with the entire, you know, Earth, and perhaps out beyond that. And then planetary health is looking at the health of our planet, but it could extend also to the universe. And just thinking about not just individuals. I think because of our practice, nursologists are very focused on individuals. And over time, some people, certainly in community health or visiting nursing, for example, we take into account more of the environment and more of like the home situation and the community situation and things. And so like when I was an undergraduate student in my public health or community health course, I visited people in Dorchester, which was semi-safe at the time to very safe. And so I was aware of, you know, of my environment, of surroundings, and, you know, there would be young men hanging out on the street corner, and they would sort of whistle at us, you know, but we dressed in like dark coats, and we had our little bags and things like that. So people knew we were the nurse, and we were always recognized for that and honored by that in many ways, and protected, if you will. I never felt threatened, but I think it could happen. And in recent years, I was very distressed to find out one day I was taking a taxi cab from the airport in Boston to my home in Boston, and the taxi driver, we started talking, and I said it was nursologist or nurse, and he said that he took the visiting nurses to where they were going to people's homes and waited for them or came back so that they didn't have to walk on the street. And it really bothered me that it's come to that, at least in some neighborhoods, people don't feel safe. And I think that that's it's probably, I would like to think it's in very selected neighborhoods. I would like to think that that the more we do to let people know that we're the nurse, that or the nurseologist, that that they will honor that. I remember one of my students when I was at Penn mentioned that she was visiting some, she was a research assistant for Dottie Bruton's research, and she was visiting people in neighborhoods that were considered not terribly safe. And the family would put out a chair or some sort of a cone or something to have her have a parking space right in front of their house. So first of all, there'd be a parking space for her, you know, in probably a crowded parking area. And second of all, she would be right at the house and they were protecting her. So I think that that as we engage the community, we engage the people in the community and think about things beyond our immediacy, that that people understand why we're there and what we're doing there, and we can be safe. And I think people, you know, like nurses are the most trusted profession. And I think that that extends to the community when we're engaged with the community.
You know, Daniel, do you want to go ahead?
No, I was just going to say it's really interesting, right? Because I think that speaks to the intersectionality that we all have of. So I did my PhD at Emory in Atlanta and then was teaching at Villanova, but working in Kensington and Philadelphia. And I think the intersectionality of who was feeling safe, right? And we would have those conversations with our students of some of your privileged white students would feel unsafe in neighborhoods that were the homes for some of our students of color. And so really trying to remind the nurse, the budding nurseologist, that like we're all in it together, and we have to really respect the communities where we're going, and thinking about how one's environment may be their home that's unfamiliar to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. And I think the other thing is just this, you know, part of the framework and the sensibilities in planetary health are around equity and justice, and thinking about, you know, equity and justice for all of our communities, currently our human communities, also our, you know, multi-species justice, and also multi-generational justice. And so thinking about all of those things where, you know, when we, you know, we live to varying extents, we live in environments that are safer and more protected and less safe and less protected. And that is true from an environmental toxin standpoint, right? Like it's true about pollution, it's true about noise, it's true about, you know, just violence and those kinds of things. And I think, you know, I think as nurses, you're right, you know, because, you know, a core part of our nurse identity is that we are the partner with the patient. We are the advocate for the patient. We are looking out for the best interests of the people that we are partnering with along their healing path. And there are times, you know, and it's different in every country. I find out, you know, more and more stories as I go to the International Congress of Nursing, and I talk to nurses around the world. Nursing moves in different ways in every community, right? Where and I think to the core of like what I think of nursing from my, you know, United States white privileged Southwestern identity is that nurses should be able to navigate safely into all of these environments, because we have the best interests, we're trying to be helpful, and that isn't everyone's experience with nursing, but going to what, you know, what Daniel's talking about too is how do we partner with people that are living in these communities to figure out ways to, you know, ways to advocate or ways to help them advocate, you know, for safer environments, very specifically physical environments, right? Yeah.
Well, I think that there's so much stereotyping. So for example, I mean, I live in Maine, but I have an apartment in Boston, and it's in a very, very, very nice neighborhood because I wanted something and my husband wanted something where I would be safe. So I'm safe from violence. However, the sidewalks are not level, and it's very easy to trip. And in the winter time, there's ice. Sometimes it's not removed from the sidewalks, and it's very slippery. So that there's danger in a way that you know, it's not safe from a physical environment, if you will, in certain, you know, in certain things from the way that we're walking, you know, surfaces we're walking on. And so I think that then we think, so I think, okay, so I live, you know, like on Beacon Hill, and maybe Dorchester is not considered the best neighborhood in the world, but we're equally in many ways unsafe and safe.
That's a good point. Yeah. Thank you for having this conversation with us. I'd love to spend some time really thinking about, you know, I don't know if this is the right term, but like the roles of nurses, right? So thinking about how as nurses, you know, we have jobs, right? We go out, I'm a nurse practitioner. I have a primary care, you know, responsibility for my individual patients and my community. And I'm actually done with that, but you know, now I'm a nurse educator and I have a responsibility for the students, for the overall education and the curriculum. So those, you know, that we have our job identities, but can we talk about how we think about embodied leadership in nursing, how we move in nursing around the things that we care about, our heartbreaks, and how we can use sensibilities of, you know, what you have been spending a lot of your academic career talking about. How do we use these to help us find our way into, you know, doing the good work in our local communities?
I think nurseologists care. I mean, they care about the people who are seeking their services, our services. I think that on an individual level, that, you know, the nurse-patient relationship is almost always very good and very positive. And I think that obviously if we're the most trusted profession, people must think well of us. And so I think that there's a lot of concern for people and maybe compassion. I think that we don't, in acute care settings, I think we don't think much beyond the acute care setting. And so sensitizing all nurseologists to the global environment, to planetary health, to the so-called social determinants of health, and thinking about what happens to these people that brought them to the situation where they needed our services, and what's going to happen when they don't no longer need our services, or at least not in an acute care setting. And so now we have discharge nurses who are in charge of discharging, but how much do those nurseologists know about the person? So if I were taking care of let's say Mrs. Smith after she had her baby, or during the time that she was having her baby, and then she was ready to go home, I know things about her from talking to her and how she was going to be managing the baby and if she had other children, and where she was going, and did she have adequate resources and supplies and things like that. But does a discharge nurse know that? Well, I don't think so. So that like we need to facilitate handoffs. So I need to be able to, let's say Heidi is the discharge nurse. So I need to hand off to you with a really comprehensive report. And it's things that that don't end up in the chart.
You know, that makes me think of something, right? Like as a PhD prepared nurse, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking of like all the different theories we could apply to this behavior change theory to change how people are giving report. How do you envision that we take, I mean, I'll say like fairly complex theories and get them into nursing practice in a way that is digestible for nurses who haven't been thinking about them for 5-10 years as part of their training and career?
Well, I, for seven different conceptual models that are in my contemporary nursing knowledge book, I developed a practice methodology, which essentially is how you do an assessment and what possible interventions there would be. And then we gave an example of each and had a fictitious family. And I think that that's the way to do that. So for example, I've been using the Roy adaptation model in my research for 40 plus years. And so if I were to do an assessment, I'd be interested in the behaviors associated with the four adaptive modes. So how are you feeling physically? How are you feeling emotionally? What are your usual activities of daily living? How are relationships with your family and friends? So the physiological self-concept, role, function, and interdependence modes. So I would have all that information. And then I would say, for each one, so how are you feeling physically? Person would respond. Then what do you think has been going on that helped you to feel that way or made you feel that way? And so on. And you get, so then you get the stimuli and you can figure out what are the focal and the contextual stimuli. And then you think about the, in Roy's model, the interventions are called management of stimuli. So you identify the most important stimuli and figure out how to help people with that, you know, whether it's requiring you know, some other professional on the healthcare team, or you can do something yourself, or you can advise the person of doing something. So I think that brings it to a practical level.
Yeah.
And, when I teach a course that has, you know, like a master's course where there's practice implications or the practice is the focus, then I help have them role play the practice methodology.
Yeah.
Jackie, can you talk to us about you know, all of the pieces of, you know, how you move theoretically and how nurses could use those to be thinking about these, you know, not necessarily new, but certainly worrisome, urgently worrisome determinants of health around, you know, planetary health, climate change, global air, land, and water pollution, water scarcity, food scarcity, you know, increasing disasters from extreme weather, those kinds of things. Can we, how are you thinking about how we move as nurses and then also address or work with these bigger planetary scale problems?
I don't think that the nurse at the bedside is thinking about those things when he or she's taking care of that patient. I think that personally, people may be thinking of it, but I'm not sure that it comes to the fore in practice. And it's something that we have to sensitize people to. And I think we do that by asking them how things are going and what their resources are, or, you know, like if you, how are you feeling emotionally? And then asking like, what are you, you know, like, what do you think is responsible for that? When I go in to see it for a routine checkup now, they do this, I think it's for Medicare, they do a questionnaire about, you know, like, are you feeling anxious? You know, are you feeling depressed? And I might say, well, I'm a little concerned about the wars now, but I'm not feeling depressed about it, but I'm thinking about that. But that's probably in my personal life that the TV's on with a lot of news shows all day long. You know, and so I hear the news, and some of it's local, some of it's global, and a lot of it's very worrisome.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think you're right. It's impacting all of us, just as we are starting to understand climate change and tipping points, and I think in nursing, and what I've noticed in my community and the community of students that were talking about disaster preparedness in the context of climate change. We're talking about planetary health as a way of thinking and moving in nursing. Nurses are experiencing worry. You know, COVID showed us all of the places where we weren't prepared for something at that scale. And nurses and others, many fields, but we're here as nurses. Nurses were on the front lines, losing their lives and holding, holding people as they died and their families couldn't be with them, right? And I think the experience of being on the front lines, for the nurses that I'm working with, that experience for the most part felt really scary and also I think gave them a experience that helped us all realize that we have to be thinking ahead so much more, and that nursing has a responsibility in that, right? How are we going to really, mitigate the health impacts from these planetary scale problems, pandemics, climate change, extreme weather, food scarcity, all of, water scarcity, all of the things that we're kind of dealing with and are going to be dealing with for the next, bit of time. Hopefully we figure out some solutions. But I think you're right. Like there's worry at home, and we have, not only do we have 24-hour news channels on our television sets, but we have 24-hour news on our, on our phone.
I mean, I'm scrolling all the time, TikTok, Twitter, or X, and it's like you just get a wave of news that you never wanted to see.
Well, and Daniel, we should talk about that, because that's actually really bad for your mental health. We need to, but it's this like constant exposure to these problem sets that feel really existential, in terms of like, is there anything that I can do? And so, what I have found, in working with nursing theories and in working with students, is that when we start to talk about how we can take this way of thinking and really integrate it into what we're doing at the bedside, right? We have obligations and responsibilities to clean up our environmental footprint in the healthcare systems. So bedside nursing can do that. We also have, we also know that people who are healthier and stay out of hospitals actually helps to reduce the amount of waste that we spend in our healthcare systems, right? So that's our health prevention, health promotion work, is that we're actually trying to keep folks healthy and out of the hospitals. Then we are, I think I could be wrong, but I think we talk about 80% of our health is determined by social and ecological environmental determinants, and that only 20% is, if we're eating our muesli for breakfast and getting enough exercise and sleep, right? So 80% of what's out there is actually in the environment, which is how we started this conversation. What's impacting our, our health and our well-being are these big structural, socio-ecological determinants. And that's where, like, for me as an educator, and a thinker, and a movement builder, I think I also think of myself as that too. But, that's where I'm really interested in, how do we use theory and what we think of ourselves in nursing? How do we use that to navigate into those spaces for all these other determinants that are not necessarily individual and behavior, but our environments? And I don't know if you have any wisdom to share from your experience and the things that you've been spending your time thinking about.
Well, all of the conceptual models that I've looked at include environment. And I think it's a matter of how then the environment gets defined and the extent to which people want to be concerned about that. And again, when you're doing an assessment, for example, to what extent do you take all of those other things into account? I think that it's important to help our learners to understand that and take that into account. And leadership needs to, I think, leadership needs to be much more clear about about how to structure nursing within clinical, within any clinical agency. And there's such incredible resistance to thinking theoretically. And yet it came to me some time ago that everything that we do is theoretical. It's just not formalized a lot. So, and if you do a certain intervention or you do an assessment, and you say, okay, this is my assessment, however you want to say. So I think this person is exhibiting shortness of breath, for example. And so then I'm thinking about, okay, I ask the person, if I think about it, like, why are you experiencing? Or I look in the medical diagnosis and find out there's some lung problem from a medical perspective. And I say, okay, so there's that. But I'm not sure that we then think about what's going on. I mean, my mother had a myocardial infarction, and she stopped smoking. And this was in the 1980s, and she'd been smoking since probably, I don't know, I was born in 1941, so probably even before that. And she smoked unfiltered cigarettes. And so she stopped smoking when she really had to. My stepfather didn't stop smoking. So there's secondhand smoke in the house. And I don't think anybody, I wasn't at home. I was living in Connecticut at the time, and I wasn't home. And nobody said anything. You know, none of the nurses or physicians or anybody said, you know, maybe it would be a good idea if you got some air filters for the house, or your husband stopped smoking, and then help them with stopping smoking. I don't think at the time there was, you know, there weren't nicotine patches and things like that to help people. So they really had to just stop on their own somehow.
Yeah. And then, you know, that's actually one of the commercial determinants of health, right? Like companies that are not letting us know that their products are unsafe. When you were talking about smoking and secondhand smoke, I mean, I live in the Southwest. We're all smoking because of the wildfire seasons, right? The amount of toxins that we're breathing in, we don't have, I mean, we do have options for air filters and closing our windows and, you know, monitoring things, but these are the kinds of things that are happening in our environment, and they do, you know, air pollution does increase our risk for myocardial infarction. So a lot of love around your family story, and your mama, and, you know, just wanting to acknowledge, how these things are really, you know, like hard and, you know, and just how the socio-ecological determinants of health are really impacting all of us. But I know, Daniel, you had a good question.
Yeah, you know, thank you for the time that you've spent with us today. I know we're wrapping up, and for our final question, I just want to ask, do you have a favorite nurse theorist, and who is it?
Well, when I started doing my books on analysis and evaluation of conceptual models and theories, I thought that, you know, I was a Rogerian, and I had evolved into doing a lot of work with Roy. But when I got to learn and understand the various different models, and when I had the privilege of interviewing so many of the theorists, all of them are favorites. I mean, I've been using, for pragmatic reasons, my program of research is based on Roy's adaptation model. My heart is in Rogerian science. I always feel like I've come home or transitioned to home when we have a Society of Rogerian conference every year. And so I don't have really a favorite theorist. I think they're all wonderful. I think the theoretical work is fabulous, and we need more of it. And we need more recognition that, as I said before, well, everything that we do is based on theory. So we do an assessment. I think I didn't finish that thought. We do an assessment. We say, this is what it is. I've identified what may be the influences or the associations with this. And so my intervention is going to be this, and I'm expecting this outcome. And I'll either get that outcome or I won't get that outcome. And that's theory. So I think that by putting the existing theories and conceptual models into practice methodologies, like essentially, you know, this is what you do in like the old procedure books or what we have on charts now, or in the electronic health records, that this is what we do, and this is what we expect, and this is what we get. So now we have a theory. So if we connect that with existing formalized theories, then people will understand that. So what I would do, for example, is I could interview a colleague, a nurseologist in practice, or a colleague in on my faculty, and say, tell me what you think nurseology is. Tell me, please, how you take care of people. And I listen to that and I say, gee, what you're doing sounds very much like. So many years ago when I was at Penn, I was talking to a colleague and she was explaining this to me. And I said, that's Orm's self-care framework. And she said, oh, you know, and so she went off and explored Orm's self-care framework. Now, I don't know whether she was using it formally after that, but she was sensitized to that. And I think that's what we have to do. And so we ask people, you know, who counts for you as human beings? Or people that you might call patients. What do you think is the environment? You know, what counts for you or what matters to you in the environment? What you think about culture, because I've added culture to the meta paradigm. You know, to what extent does culture, you know, influence people's behaviors and health and whatever? What do you think about health and what is health to you? Like health to me is wellness, illness, and disease on one level, and otherwise, and quoting John Phillips from Rogerian Science, it's well-becoming, we're always well-becoming. And then what do you think counts as nursing, or what I call nursology? So what counts in terms of the doing, of the educating, or the practice, or the administration, or the research? But I think the more practical we can be in our theory courses, the more likely it will be. My theory is the more likely it would be that the learners will go out and use these models and theories. I think it's the responsibility of the chief nursing officer and the charge nurses and the supervisors to have a particular conceptual model that guides practice. I mean, now that in magnet hospitals, they have something that they call something about practice delivery models or something like that. And they're kind of inventing conceptual models where I don't think that they needed to do that.
Yeah.
But there's just this resistance to anything formal in theory. And so people will say, well, I don't pay any attention to theory. And yet I wrote a blog and I write another in Nursing Science Quarterly. It's impossible to think atheoretically. So you're always thinking theory, and it's a matter of sensitizing people to thinking of it on a very pragmatic or straightforward, simple kind of way of, if I do this, I'm expecting this to happen. So if I put a peony in a bowl with water and put it on the table, and my cat thinks it's okay to be on the table and I don't shoo her away, and she sees ants crawling out from the, because peonies, no matter how much you shake them, they always have some ants with them that are responsible for opening up the bud. So she sees water in the bowl and she sees the ants. And so she's up on the table looking at these creepy crawly things and drinking the water. So, you know, so I know that if I put the peony in the water there, this is what's going to happen. So what do? I put the bowl with the peony someplace where she doesn't reach, like on top of a cabinet or something. And I mean, it's as simple as that.
Your expectation of what was going to happen was different than mine. I was prepared for the cat to swipe it off and break it.
No.
And I was thinking I didn't know ants helped the peonies open. So here we are learning a lot of things about your cat, peonies, ants, and table height. Jackie, thanks for bringing that, you know, that home for us, because I really appreciate the leadership and the work that you are doing to help all of us realize that as nurses, we are nurseologists, and that as nurses, we do move in these very unique, cool places. We have opportunities to really, you know, move the needle on the social and ecological determinants of health that are impacting us, that are impacting our families, that are impacting our communities, that are impacting our colleagues and our health systems. It sounds to me like, you know, that including planetary health in frameworks of thinking about health, that it's, you know, outside of individual and, you know, communities, societies, that we are thinking about generations and all of our global communities, that, you know, the more than human world is a common way of thinking about it, can all be integrated in to how we move as nurseologists, and how the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments community is moving with the commercial and political and environmental determinants of health every day, and how all of us around the world can pay attention to these kinds of things in every nook and cranny of nursing.
I think one of the strategies is to really encourage nurseologists to pay attention to the news. I mean, I don't do any of the social media kinds of things, but I mean, I was thinking as we were talking of some years ago, one of my colleagues at UMass Boston said that she was finding that the literature suggests that contagious diseases were practically eradicated. And then a few years later, I heard something about, I think it was in Syria, where there was an outbreak of polio. And now we're hearing in Gaza, there's an outbreak of polio. And so there's all the political aspects of getting vaccine to people. And apparently they were very successful with first dose. And I heard on the radio just the other day that they had made some inroads on second dose, but they were having a lot of difficulty because of the political situation and where the people who were delivering the vaccine could get to the people who needed it. And so it's clear that we haven't eradicated diseases that we thought that we had eradicated. And we have the means to do that. We have the means to control polio and many other contagious diseases now. But because of the political climate and wars and displacement of people and whatever else is going on, it's very difficult to get to the people.
Yeah.
And then we have, you know, we have people probably globally, certainly in the United States, who don't believe in vaccines.
Well, and that's the pandemic of misinformation that's happening, right? And how difficult it is to discern what's good information and what's not good information when it comes through from the news and the internet, right? And all of our, you know, social media, and the, you know, sort of the political and information disinformation that's happening. And we'll have another podcast about that. The you know, these are the things that we're navigating as nurses. And I think, you know, we really started to recognize that during the pandemic, during the COVID-19 pandemic, how information and trusted information sources, traditionally trusted information sources, were not being trusted in lieu of these, you know, other information sources that, you know, for all intensive purposes were, you know, were just, you know, trying to manipulate and polarize people. And, you know, and then what ended up happening with folks' health as a result of that. Well, good. Yeah, that's a light note to end on. Daniel, do you have any final wisdoms to share before we let Jackie move back to her teaching today?
I have nothing other than to say, please come to the next podcast. We'll always be political.
Jackie, thank you so much for being with us today. It's just an honor to have you here. And yeah, thank you. Thank you for taking the time and to participate in this interview.
Well, thank you. It's certainly been my honor, and I really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you to Dr. Fawcett for this very helpful interview about nursing theory, and especially how the planetary health framework fits in. It offers great perspective on how we think about shifting our traditional mindsets to incorporating the larger world and planet. And thank you very much to Heidi and Daniel for hosting the podcast. And thank you all for listening. As a reminder, the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast is 100% non-commercial. We charge nothing and advertise nothing. Please tell others about it. share with your nursing colleagues, family, and friends. Thank you. Talk to you next time.